Hi, everyone. Dan Cassidy here. Welcome back to the Washington Weekly Podcast on the UBS Market Moves Podcast channel. Joining me here on this Thursday for the conversation, glad to welcome back Shane Lieberman, Senior Governmental Affairs Advisor from Governmental Affairs U.S. here at UBS. Shane, thank you for dropping by on this Thursday afternoon. Great to have you back here on the podcast with us.
Thanks, Dan. It's good to be back with you.
So, Shane, a few topics we'll cover with our listeners for this week, beginning with the road to the midterm elections. On a related note, there has been several headlines surrounding Missouri's redistricting efforts in response to the Missouri Supreme Court's decision to reverse the state's redrawn congressional map. Can you bring us up to speed in terms of what took place and how might this development impact the midterm elections?
Yeah, you know, we've spoken about redistricting earlier this year, and this was a part of that effort by Republicans and Democrats as well. But in Missouri, Republicans control the state legislature. So their congressional delegation is currently 6 Republicans, 2 Democrats. So the state legislature went ahead to redistrict, which would have moved it to a 7-1 map with 7 Republicans likely and 1 Democrat likely. Now, this was challenged and struck down by the Missouri State Supreme Court. And the there was a challenge to that ruling. And a Missouri-based U.S. district judge ruled earlier this week that the new map must be used. However, it then went to the Supreme Court, which you know, did not agree with that U.S. district judge. So the short version now is it looks like Missouri is going to have to go back to its 6-2 map, 6 Republicans and likely 2 Democrats. And, you know, you may be sitting there wondering, wow, that's a lot of fighting over one seat that is likely to go to Republicans. And this is when I, you know, remind you about how close the House is right now. You know, currently it is, I think, 218 to 214 with one independent who really is a Republican. So it's 219 to 214. But then that doesn't include the 2 vacancies for members who resigned their position. And if you give one to each side, because that's who had previously controlled them, we're talking about the House being 220 to 215, which means Democrats need a net gain of 3 seats to win the majority. And so when things are that close, every House race could matter. So, you know, this is pretty important to both sides. And, you know, could be, you know, in a close election, what decides who has control of the House. I mean, we're still in the bucket of Democrats will win the House, and they're going to win more seats than, you know, enough seats that this one does not make or break the majority. However, when you have such a narrow majority and you're trying to get things past the House floor and you need 218 votes, every additional person you have makes a real difference. You know, if you have only 220 people, you can only lose 2 votes to get something passed. However, if you expand that to 225, that gives you more flexibility. So this could be quite meaningful to not only who controls the House after this election, but what they're able to do, what bills are able to pass, and what they're able to, you know, have leverage over the president on, or Senate Republicans, if Republicans hold the Senate, in negotiations. So pretty meaningful.
Yeah, very interesting developments recently out of Missouri. And to your point, a handful of race outcomes can make all the difference in terms of the controlling party's ability to legislate. So we'll see what happens. Sticking with the midterm elections, on a related note, Shane, the GOP is holding its first ever midterm convention. This is taking place in Dallas, Texas. It did kick off last night. We did see President Trump deliver a keynote address, several other speakers as well. So what did the president's messaging consist of during his address?
Yeah, I mean, I think you're right to point out that I think this is the first time the Republicans have ever held a midterm convention. Democrats had held a few, two in the 70s and then I think in 1982, but stopped doing it because, it is an event that costs a lot of money and really takes a lot of effort to produce. I think that's why Republicans have shied away from it. President Trump really pushed this, and so the Republican leadership acquiesced, and now they're having this convention in Dallas. Typically at a convention, the president or the party's nominee addresses the crowd on the final night. President Trump addressed the crowd on the first night. I think this is in a big effort to try and get Republican enthusiasm for this election and get out the vote. And because there is an enthusiasm gap at this moment. And so Republicans, if they have any chance to hold the House and Senate, really need to enthuse their base to get out to vote. So that was one of the major things behind this convention and President Trump's speech last night. But as you know, a lot of takeaways. I think obviously the biggest takeaway right now is his proposal for $5,000 checks for every adult American, which would come at a cost of over $1 trillion. So, at this moment, I would say it's unlikely, but it's definitely something that's caught the attention of many. The president also talked about some of the things he wanted to highlight, like last year's tax bill and some of the tax cuts for, working Americans who are paid overtime or no tax on tips or the deduction for seniors. So highlighting those and trying to remind those voters who those issues speak to that Republicans delivered. So, will this at the end of the day be enough? That remains to be seen. I think, the reality is that last night was also the first NFL football game of the year. President Trump, said his ratings were higher than the NFL's. Those numbers usually take a few days out, but I would think the NFL won out in viewership last night.
Well, it will be interesting to see if the convention has any impact towards voter sentiment comes the midterm election in early November. Maybe one more topic for this week, Shane, as we're speaking here on the eve of the 25th anniversary of the 9/11 attacks, very somber and notable anniversary. How will lawmakers across the country be reflecting tomorrow?
Yeah, 25 years, it's sometimes hard to think that it's been so long. And, I remember where I was on that day 25 years ago, a young staffer here in D.C. at the Capitol. And a lot of emotions come flooding back. But, I think a lot of most lawmakers were not in Congress. Now, pretty much all lawmakers in office were alive. But it's quite interesting that I think now we have 100 million Americans who were not alive or do not remember the event. So, lawmakers will be going to different events to honor this solemn day and also try and remind Americans about, we live in a dangerous world and we have to take our national security seriously. Obviously, I think the kind of more notable events will be, in downtown Manhattan at the Pentagon in Shanksville, Pennsylvania, where lawmakers will go to those events and try and honor the solemn day. There's one very interesting event that I wish I was able to get up to New England to see. There's a 9/11 tribute in New Hampshire, Mount Washington, where two huge LED light beams will project 3 miles into the sky. It's supposed to be visible from almost 135-mile radius on a clear night. So if you live up that way, look up and maybe you'll be able to see it. But I think lawmakers across the board are going to take the day to, maybe not do so much do the campaigning that you would expect them to do, but more focus on, the legacy of 9/11 and, talk to, people who are not only impacted by it personally, but some of the younger Americans who, still don't grasp how significant of a day it was.
Well, it's great to hear that there will be a variety of ceremonies spanning the nation tomorrow, and definitely will be a day of remembrance and reflection across generations. Though, Shane, it was great catching up with you today. As always, thank you for dropping by for the podcast, and as always, do look forward to our next conversation.
Thanks for having me, Dan. I hope you have a great weekend, and we'll talk to you soon.
Sounds great. Thank you, Shane. Appreciate that. And again, today we have been joined by Shane Lieberman, Senior Governmental Affairs Advisor for Governmental Affairs U.S. here at UBS. And as always to you, our listeners, I do like to highlight that Shane and team do produce the Washington Weekly publication, which is available, the latest edition, on UBS.com/Washington Weekly. From UBS Studios, I'm Dan Cassidy. Thank you for joining us. Thank you for tuning in. Be sure to visit ubs.com/studios to view the entire UBS Studios suite of podcast channels, along with our video offerings, such as UBS Trending. You can also follow us on Instagram for content highlights at UBS Trending. UBS Studios is part of the UBS Chief Investment Office within UBS Global Wealth Management. Visit ubs.com/CIO to view the latest research.
As a firm providing wealth management services to clients, UBS Financial Services, Inc. offers investment advisory services in its capacity as an SEC registered investment advisor and brokerage services in its capacity as an SEC registered broker-dealer. Investment advisory services and brokerage services are separate and distinct, differ in material ways, and are governed by different laws and separate arrangements. It is important that you understand the ways in which we conduct business and that you carefully read the agreements and disclosures that we provide about the products or services we offer. For more information, please review client relationship summary provided at ubs.com/relationship summary. UBS 2026, all rights reserved. The key symbol and UBS are among the registered and unregistered trademarks of UBS. UBS Financial Services, Inc. is a subsidiary of UBS Group AG, member FINRA SIPC.